Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Kashap, and I'm sitting in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
Today, we're talking about thinking big.
Right.
Practical ways, tips to think bigger. But before we even get to that, my question is, and this may seem like a dumb question, but why does it matter? Do we have to think big?
Well, first of all, it's an option, right?
So you don't, it is an option.
You don't have to be a bigger thinker. In fact, most people in the world are small thinkers. And I think that we diminish the impact that we can have on the world. I think we were born to have a big impact on the world. I think we've all been given...
All of us, not just a select few people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've been given these enormous gifts, whatever they may be. It's easy for us to diminish those, or in comparing ourselves to other people, to think that we don't have as much to offer as other people. But I think that learning to think big, not just in terms of what we want to accomplish for ourselves, but in terms of what we want to do to serve other people, to think bigger about that is an art form. And I think we can learn it. And I think we have to unlearn a lot of the ways that our culture... maybe even our parents, but our society diminishes us and tries to keep us locked in this prison of small thinking.
Okay, so let's differentiate between the two really quick, just to make sure we all understand what we mean by small thinking versus big thinking. Because I think there are some who will assume big thinking means grandiose or puffed up or whatever. But what are you really getting at?
Well, I'm really getting at having... the broadest possible impact that we can have.
Okay.
For example, my wife Gail is an artist.
Okay.
Okay, and so she is a new artist. Mm-hmm. She just started. She's doing amazing work, and people are already asking if they can buy her paintings.
In fact, I asked her for one the other day.
You did?
I told her, I don't know if I can afford you, but I need to know how much you're selling your paintings for. Because I love them. They're very good.
Well, she did a test at the beginning of this year where she took a painting that all of us love that she did for one of my daughters, and she did some prints of it. And she said, just as a test, I'm willing to do this. It was a really scary thing to put herself out there.
Of course.
And she sold 10 copies in less than an hour.
Wow.
Like, boom, that was all she had.
Uh-huh.
Totally sold out. And yet there's this inner voice that she struggles with that tries to diminish her and says, you know, that's, she shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I said, but what good does it do to keep that gift to yourself, to play small? Because there are people that would be blessed by your painting, that will be inspired by your paintings, that will learn to think bigger for themselves if you distribute them. So in a sense, as a matter of stewardship, you have an obligation to give it the biggest possible distribution. So for example, if you write a book, you know, and you've written a book.
Yes.
And we have to acknowledge not everybody's gonna hit the New York Times list. Not everybody's gonna have the ability to hit it. But I'm saying writing a book's a lot of work.
It is.
Right? And so why not play for the big win? Why not decide at the beginning, you know what, I'm gonna do everything I possibly can to hit the bestseller list. It may be an Amazon bestseller list. It may be, the USA Today list. It could be a number of different lists. But I'm saying, why not have a bigger impact? If it was worth writing it, and you believe this content was a gift to you, and you want to share it with other people, why think small? Is it because you're trying to protect yourself? Because you're trying to avoid risk? Because you're trying to stay in your comfort zone? Because when we stretch and we think bigger, it's amazing what we can accomplish. And I would contend, and it's really the premise for this show, that most people can accomplish far, far more than they think they're capable of. But it starts in their thinking, and that's really what I want to talk about today.
Which I like that. I also like the idea of, like you said, people can accomplish more. They can also contribute more. So you can process that two different ways. It's not just about you thinking big for your own benefit, but that whole contribution piece where you can actually... pay it forward, give something away, make that impact on the world that's bigger than you imagine. The other interesting thing is that we rarely achieve bigger than what we dream.
So true.
Right? So
that
we
is
set
so true.
A threshold.
That's a good insight.
We set a threshold by our own thinking, and we rarely achieve beyond that. So, for example, and this is going to be a terrible example, but with our kids, we don't just dream that my goal is to get them through school with a D average and somehow stay out of jail.
Right, right, yeah.
We set pretty high dreams for our kids, and not unrealistic, but we want to aim for that. And that ends up broadening the possibilities of what we can imagine for them and how we invest in them and ourselves and our family and everything
else.
That's a
good example. Yep.
All right, so let's dive in. We're going to have 7 tips for escaping the prison of small thinking.
Yes.
So small thinking is a prison. Big thinking is freedom and possibility and
yep.
opportunity.
For
All
sure.
right, give us the very first tip.
Okay, so the first tip is just to imagine the possibilities. Now, this is not where our mind goes first. You know, when we're usually thinking about an outcome in the world, again, go back to thinking about writing a book. You think, okay, I mean, just putting it out there, you know, maybe I can hope that it's going to have a big impact, mm-hmm. but I don't want to hope too much because then I might be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play it safe. So I'm going to dial it back a little bit. So I'm going to put it inside my comfort zone. But imagine what could be possible. Is it possible that a first-time author could be a New York Times best-selling author? Yes or no?
It's possible.
It's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't happen very often.
Granted, but it is possible.
But it's probably not going to happen unless you have the intention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might luck into it, and I know of a few authors that have done that. But what if you could be intentional with that, and then you could deconstruct the process and increase, because I don't think it's a certainty, but increase the probability. But it begins by imagining what might be possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there be some people listening to this and say, forget the New York Times list, if I can just get a book published.
Yes, true.
You know, just get somebody interested in my book. Is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
It is possible. I'm telling you, there are thousands of books that are published by traditional publishers every year in the U.S., not to mention the rest of the world. In addition to that, self-publishing has made it possible for nearly anybody mm-hmm. to get a book in print. So you've got to start with the possibility of what it is that you want to create and not start, because the opposite of that is to start with the limitations.
And it would never happen.
Yeah,
that
never
will
happen.
Never happen.
And you have these discussions with people all the time, and they're the first ones to throw up the obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you say to them, well, you could get that book published. And they said, nobody. No, you know, publishers are downsizing. They're entertaining fewer titles. They're not publishing as many books. Well, really what they're doing there, they're not stating what's reality. Instead, what they're telling you is why they want to stay in a safe place
mm-hmm.
and not have to risk anything.
It's fear.
It's
I mean,
fear.
It's really fear.
It's
they put
fear.
Up these buffers. I've done it before, where
I
you put
too.
Up these buffers to keep yourself from disappointment.
Yeah.
But when you block yourself from disappointment, you block yourself from possibilities.
And from the potential to have the impact that
yeah.
you were meant to have. So you've got to allow yourself the freedom to dream. What could be possible?
I love that.
What if that message that's burning in your heart could become a book? What if that book could be published and it could transform your business? What if it could transform the lives of thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people
mm-hmm.
who read it?
Mm-hmm.
What could it do to the world? You know, I mean, just to let your mind go there and indulge yourself in kind of soaking in possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Before you turn to the obstacles, there'll be plenty of time for that, and you will need to turn to the obstacles.
Well, they have to be faced.
They have to be faced, and they have to be overcome. But those, I would maintain, are also become the strategy for how you solve the problem and get to where you want to go. But to allow yourself just to soak in the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
One of the exercises that we do in 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever, which, as you know, is my goal setting course, is we start with possibility. That's the very first exercise on day one.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have all kinds of limiting beliefs that hold them back.
And they don't even realize it.
They don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to be aware of it yourself. I mean, I have limiting beliefs still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, my daughters, my sons-in-law, my friends will call me out on those things because I've given them permission to do
mm-hmm.
that. But that's what we got to overcome. And that's why we have to start with possibility of what it is that we want to achieve. What outcome do we dream of achieving in the world?
Now, the second tip is an immediate follow-up to the first one. So after you imagine the possibilities, what do you do?
Write down your dream.
So now you take it from up here
yep.
to actually put, which is also scary. It's
it
risky because you're actually putting it to paper.
Yeah, you want to write it down because this is how we begin to give life to vision.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone has once said, thoughts disentangle themselves, passing over the lips and through pencil tips.
Mm-hmm.
So when we write, we begin to get clarity. And clarity is a first prerequisite for achieving anything of significance. We've got to get clear on what we want. I think it's very interesting that several times in the Gospels, and this isn't going to be a Sunday school lesson, but several times in the Gospels, Jesus starts by asking somebody, what do you want me to do?
Oh, yes.
Now, he probably knows, right?
I think he probably has a good idea, yeah.
It's actually obvious,
uh-huh.
you know, what they should want him to do. But he wants to make sure that they have clarity about what they want mm-hmm. before he proceeds to do any further work. So I think sometimes the first business is clarity, and the way that we get clarity is writing down our thoughts. So for example, recently I took my team on a strategic planning retreat. So we went off for 3 days in the hills of Tennessee, beautiful setting. And we talked about, you know, all the typical SWOT plan, you know, our strengths, our weaknesses, our mm-hmm. opportunities and threats. But then we got to the vision part of it. And so we said, okay, look, let's just talk about possibility. And let's start writing on the whiteboard what we'd envision 5 to 10 years from now.
Okay.
What would be the ideal thing? So one of the things we said, we had a dollar figure for how big we wanted to grow the company, which was basically 20x what it is now.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so it was just a crazy goal. You know, everybody's like, what? You know, we can't do that. Well, why not? Okay. But what if we could do that without anyone having to work on the weekends so that everybody has sufficient margin so that we're giving people time off to pursue what matters most, like their families and their health and their most important relationships. So we created this vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it began by writing it down.
You have to put that first, yeah.
You have to get it down, because then it, you start believing it. Or like the studio that we're sitting in today, we call it the carriage house, which is a fancy word for garage in the South. but the first thing that we did was, Gail and I imagined building this, right? And so we thought about the possibility. What would it look like if it was as big as it is, and it had a full apartment upstairs, which it does, and it has this video studio downstairs, which it does? Well, the next thing was, we had a conversation with an architect. So we began to speak it into existence, and here's what we described. And then he took it the next step further, and he began to draw up the blueprints for it. And then my son-in-law, who was the contractor, took those blueprints and created out of that a 3D model. He had a 3D mm-hmm. printer, created a 3D model. And so I stared at that thing for months, at that little model. And after a while, I said, okay, I'm ready to start this project. Let's start building. And here we're sitting in it today.
Yes, absolutely.
But it begins with the thinking, you know, imagining the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Then to begin to write it down. And in this case, it took the form of some drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And then people begin to build it, and it comes into reality.
I love that. It's such a great, tangible example of what you're walking us through. Okay, so imagine the possibilities. Write down your dream. What would be the third tip?
This is really all about the why. Mm-hmm. Connect with what's at stake. You've heard me talk about this before.
Say, those of us who know and love you, Michael, knew this was coming.
I know. It's a part of anything I do, because I think why we do what we do really matters. It's mm-hmm. the driving force for what enables us to go through the messy middle and get to the destination that we desire to arrive at.
Okay.
And so connecting with what's at stake. What's your big why? Why is this important? If you're writing a book, you know, I've been using mm-hmm. that example, so let's go back to it. What's at stake? And I think you got to do this both positively and negatively. What's at stake if you actually get that book published?
If you do it, yes.
You know, you could write down all the reasons why as a series of bullet points. For example, man, if I do this, I would be able to help thousands of mm-hmm. people. If I do this, I would be able to really establish my authority and create social proof for my business. If I do this, I'd be able to create a financial income, you know, a revenue stream. If I do this, this would give me introduction to people that I would never meet mm-hmm. in any other context. So to write down all those reasons positively, but then conversely, to write down as a series of bullet statements all the reasons why it's at stake negatively. Like, if you keep that book bottled up, Michelle, and you don't get that next book out,
uh-huh.
what's at stake?
Uh-huh.
What happens? You know, the world doesn't get the message.
Yeah, you live with a regret.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
You live with a regret. You may not have processed through what you needed to process yep. through as you were writing, because writing can be so cathartic. I mean, there's so many. It could go all the way down. For me, writing a book is something my kids watch.
Yes.
And then they're inspired by what I'm doing. So they want to do the same kind of thing. They want to get their message out there. I mean, we could keep going.
When you think of all the people.
So if I don't.
Like when you wrote Undone.
Uh-huh.
And if you had not written that book, because you've seen the emails from people.
Oh, every day. Every day.
Think of all the people that wouldn't have been helped,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't have been encouraged, that would have felt isolated and alone and felt like they were suffering in silence because you were too selfish to write that book. But you weren't. You were courageous. And you wrote that book, yeah. you got it out there into the world, mm-hmm. and it's having a huge impact.
And there are many, as you know, obstacles that almost kept being out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many. So to push through that and see it. Yeah, absolutely.
So staying connected, you're making a very good point there too. Staying connected with your why, mm-hmm. what's at stake, is important for being able to push through the difficult things. I don't know of anybody who has had a more difficult last couple of years than you. and for you to be able to be sitting here today in the studio and now in the process of writing your next book, mm-hmm. you know, all of that, I think, is because you were connected to that why. You knew what was at stake.
The stakes, every day the stakes are in front of me. And I know, and you're absolutely right. It drives me to keep going and keep pushing through because I know the why.
That's
I know
right.
what's at stake.
And it's important to write this down too. Mm-hmm. So I write the dream down, you know, the vision, the goal, whatever you want to call it. And then I write down the whys because I know that I don't want to miss this because when I get in the fog of war, so to speak, mm-hmm. and I'm discouraged and, you know, I don't know which way is up. I've got that kind of, what do they call that when airplane pilots... vertigo.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you don't know what's up and what's down, and that happens to all of us. It happens to us spiritually, emotionally, in our careers and everything else. That why, mm-hmm. clearly articulated, written down, can be a great source of encouragement to get us through those difficult days when we want to quit.
Without a doubt. All right, today we're talking about how to escape the prison of small thinking. It's all about big thinking today. So far, we've covered 3 tips. We still have 4 more to come, so stick with us. We'll be right back.
Has this ever happened to you? You write a list of goals with the best of intentions. You're excited, motivated for a few weeks, and then life gets in the way. You get distracted or discouraged. You stop moving toward what really inspires you. If you want to achieve what matters most, traditional goal setting will only get you so far. What you need is a proven plan. Well, I've got a proven plan, and I'd like to share it with you. I've just released a brand new free video series entitled Design Your Life, and in this 3-part video series, I share my proven system to stop drifting and finally achieve your best year ever. It starts by helping you answer 3 simple, but powerful questions that will put you back in the driver's seat. And it shows you how to literally map your entire year on paper so you know how to get where you want to go without getting lost along the way. To get access to Design Your Life, just go to bestyearever.me and enter your email address in the space provided. If you're tired of making goals but not achieving them, don't miss your chance to discover how to stop drifting and start making meaningful progress in your life. Sign up today at bestyearever.me.
Today we're talking about 7 tips to escape the prison of small thinking. So far we've covered 3 of those, which include imagine the possibilities, 2, write down your dream, and 3, connect with what's at stake, which is an ongoing theme here at This Is Your Life. What would be the 4th tip?
Outline what would have to be true in order to accomplish that vision. Okay. In other words, I kind of fast forward to the end of the process and looking back, standing in the place of having achieved the vision, what would have to be true. So for example, as I think about building this carriage house that we're in right now, if I were, you know, 12 months ago when we were just beginning to build this and I was looking forward, I'd say, okay, what has to be true? Well, I had to make sure I had the money. Number 2, I have to have a contractor draw up the plans, or an architect draw up the plans. 3, I have to hire a contractor.
Okay.
4, I have to get permits from the city. You know, 5, I don't know what.
Yes.
But
is it kind of like a to-do list or a task list in a sense, like an outline of what needs to happen between point A and point B?
Kind of.
Okay.
Let me give another example. We've been talking about book publishing, so let me give an example there. So if I think to myself, if I want to get a book on the New York Times bestseller list, what would have to be true to make that happen?
Okay.
Well, first of all, I have to write a book on a subject that has mass appeal.
Okay.
Okay. 2, I have to write a good book.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
good
it has
content. Yeah.
Good content. It has to be well written. It has to really connect. Mm-hmm. 3, I probably am going to need a publisher that can get me the kind of distribution, wide distribution, mm-hmm. that the New York Times polls, because they're going to look at Barnes & Noble, they're going to look at Amazon, they're uh-huh. going to look at, you know, all the major outlets. So I need a publisher that can give me that kind of distribution. Well, how am I going to get that kind of publisher? I probably need an agent that can push the door open for me and connect me to one of those publishers. So now I'm identifying all the things that have to be mm-hmm. true. And I just try to write these down because they're, when you break it down, like writing a New York Times bestseller sounds...
It's massive.
It's massive.
And it's impossible to achieve.
That's right. So how do you eat an elephant? One bite mm-hmm. at a time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to break it down into these smaller chunks. So if today my assignment, actually this was my assignment a couple weeks ago, I said, okay, if I want this next book, Living Forward, which I've written and will be out in the spring of 2016, I said, okay, what has to be true? One of the things that had to be true is I need endorsements, major endorsements from the highest profile people that I can find. Okay, how do I do that? Well, let's make a list of all the people I'd love to have endorsements okay. from. So I had Oprah and I had Tony Robbins and I had all these people. And so I listed out all these people. Okay, so each one of these is just part of what has to be true. Okay. And so what else has to be true? Well, I have to ask. You know, they're not just going to, you know, give me a call and Oprah's going to say, hey, just thinking about you today. And wondered if there's anything I can do to help.
You mean that doesn't happen for you? It happens for me all the time.
But it's amazing what you get when you ask. And so I put together an email and I put together some of the sample chapters and I put together the kind of endorsements I was looking at. And then one by one, individually and personally, I emailed each of those people. Well, actually, I didn't email Oprah because I couldn't get her email address. But if you're listening to this,
Oprah, if you're listening.
but I did email a bunch of other folks, and I would say I got 90% of what I asked for.
That's great. Which, you know, back to this whole prison of small thinking, if you don't even dream big enough to ask, it's never going to happen.
I know. And there are people literally that I was scared to death to ask of.
Of course.
I said to my family, contrary to what I teach, you know, watch your mouth kind of thing. I said, well, I'm going to send one to so-and-so, but I don't think he's going to endorse the book.
Who's your self-protecting?
Yeah, I'm self-protecting.
You're self-protecting.
I'm saying, you know, I'm not even sure I can get through his people. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, I'm not even sure he likes me. You know, I mean, I was like doing all the self-protective stuff.
And just so you know, it's good for us to realize that you have this whole dialogue going on in your head,
gosh.
And like we all do.
I do. So, and so lo and behold, he said yes. Mm. And he wrote a great endorsement and I was floored. In fact, his was the first one that came back.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I love that. Which again is power of thinking big and taking that first step. And even thinking it and writing it down.
And asking yourself what has to be true. Because mm-hmm. it's usually, if you're going to think big and have a big dream, it's never going to be one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, if I just do this one thing, no, then all the dominoes will fall.
It's more complicated than that.
It's more complicated. So a couple weeks ago, it was the endorsements. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's a whole different thing that I'm working on now, all of which is going to lead, I hope, to the book hitting the New York Times list.
Oh, no. It's going to hit, right?
Yes. You're
going to believe it.
Yes.
It's going to be true.
Speak it.
All right, let's move on to the fifth tip of how you can escape the prison of small thinking. What would that be?
It's decide what you can do to affect the outcome.
You know what I love about this one is it acknowledges that you won't be able to do everything.
That's
but
right.
There is something you can do.
Well, and here's what usually happens. We get immediately focused on all the stuff that's outside of our control.
Uh-huh.
Like I can't get on the Today Show because that's beyond my control if they invite me on the Today mm-hmm. Show. And you start thinking about all this stuff. You know, I don't know what outlets the New York Times pulls and how can I get my book in those outlets even if I wanted to. And you focus on what's outside of your control. But here's the thing that's really powerful with this particular point is to embrace your own agency.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have control over? Well, a heck of a lot more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have control over whether I have the courage and do the work of asking those people for endorsements, mm-hmm. right? I have control over what kind of book I write.
Absolutely.
I have control over whether I send the email to the agents. And I also have control over my attitude when I hit the rejections. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would find it interesting, Michelle, that in this book, Living Forward, I told you the story last night at dinner. But initially, when we started shopping that book, my agent sent it out to 5 publishers with the entire manuscript. And all 5 of them rejected it. Now, here I am. I've had 2 New York Times bestselling books before.
Which, you know, that's a very important point because some people listening think once you hit it once, you have it made. It's not true.
It's not true.
We're working at it every time.
And it stung to me like it does to everybody else to get rejection.
But did you eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's? That's what I want to know.
No, but I should have. That would have been awesome. But it discouraged me.
Of course it did.
And
yes.
I thought, because I'd written the entire book already.
And you've been working, I mean, you have this massive history in publishing. You know, you want to believe that it's going to be easier, but it's
I know. I thought
it
I had
still
the,
hurt.
The system wired, but it hurt.
Yeah.
And so Rick, my agent, Rick Christian, said to me, he said, look, this is just all feedback.
Good. He reframed it.
He reframed it for me. He said, it's just all feedback. This has all been, you know, part of the beta test.
Uh-huh.
And now you're going to take what these editors have said and you're going to incorporate that into the manuscript. We're going to retool it. And then you're going to go back. We're going to go back out again. And we did. And we had several publishers that were interested in it.
And now you're very close to having it released.
Now we're very close.
That's
and so
great.
I'm excited about it. But it began with that. It began with deciding where I could affect the outcome.
What you could do to affect the outcome. All right, so let's move on to tip number 6, and that is?
To determine when this will happen.
So setting a time frame?
Yeah, putting a deadline on it.
Okay.
You know,
not that it won't change at some point, but having some kind of tangible deadline on it.
Because otherwise it's just a dream.
Okay.
It's just an aspiration, you know. Someday, maybe, I'll get
someday,
to that.
Someday, yeah. It's so far off and way ahead.
Oh, well, so I was talking to, I go to this physician's assistant. So instead of a doctor, she's giving me some advice on nutrition and stuff.
Okay.
And so this was right before Gail and I left on our Sabbath this last summer. We were going for a month-long sabbatical to Maine and then on to Prince Edward Island. And so she said to me, she said, oh, I would love to do that. And I said, you would? She said, oh, I can't imagine anything better than getting away for a month. And I said, really? I said, so when are you going to do that? And she said, well,
she didn't know.
You know, maybe 3 or 4 years in the future or something.
Uh-huh.
And I said, why not next year? And she said, I don't know. Why not next year? And I said, exactly. Why not next year? I said, if you put a date on it and then you work backwards, some of this stuff I said to her, I said, what would have to be true? What would have to be true in your business?
Mm-hmm.
What would have to be true financially? You know, try to do this a little bit detached. You know, don't get all caught up in, you know, all the negative thinking and all the obstacles and all that at the beginning. But just when is it going to happen and put it on your calendar and then trust that if you set that intention loose and are really serious about it, that you're going to figure out everything else along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't checked back with her. I don't know if she did
okay,
it.
Okay, you have to check back and then come back and tell us because I'm dying to
know. She
doesn't
listen to the podcast, so maybe she'll tell me whether she did or she didn't.
That's great. Good advice. All right. So far, we've gone through 6 tips to escaping the prison of small thinking. The first one is imagine the possibilities. The second, write down your dream. 3, connect with what's at stake. 4, outline what would have to be true. 5, decide what you can do to affect the outcome. 6, determine when this will happen. And 7 is?
Review your goals daily.
Daily.
At the very least, weekly,
mm-hmm.
but as a part of my morning ritual. In fact, you can see back over my shoulder that I have a screensaver on my laptop back there that has all my goals. So they're playing constantly when my screensaver's on. And but I review them in the morning too. You know, I go through this ritual where I read the Bible, I pray, I go work out, I read through my news feed for the day, and I review my goals. Takes about 2 minutes. But yeah, I just constantly want those to be in the front of my mind because I'm asking myself the question, what can I do today to move the needle on one of these goals?
Mm-hmm.
So reviewing them
daily. You're living very intentionally versus reactively. So
That's
you
right.
have every morning you start and you're very purposed with how you choose to live that day.
Yeah.
I love that.
Exactly.
All right. So as we conclude today's episode today, I just have one question for you that always seems to come up when we're thinking, when we're talking about thinking big. Is it possible to think too big, to be, you know, delusional and think way too far outside of the box, or is the sky the limit?
It probably is. You know, when I think about things that I want to accomplish, I pretty much peg the needle at delusional and then dial it back a few clicks.
Okay. Well, there you have it. But that makes sense. You
right.
know, go way off the charts and then come back just a little bit. The thing is we play it safe way too often.
Well, and we do. And I mean, for example, if I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to play center for the NBA. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get, at 60 years old, I'm going to get in the NBA and I'm going to play center. I mean, that would be delusional, right?
There's like a host of people that would surround you at that point and let you know that you're insane.
Exactly. Starting with my family.
We love you, but no.
Starting with my family. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed today's episode, you can find a complete transcript and all the show notes at michaelhyatt.com. If you'd like to watch the episode, you can also find the video online. But before you do anything else, do us a favor, head over to iTunes. It only takes about 30 seconds and rate our program. You can also leave a comment if you want, but just simply rating it helps us get this information into the right hands. Thank you so much for doing that. Do you have any final thoughts for today?
Yeah, I would just encourage people to give Big Thinking a try. There's a tremendous book that I would encourage people to read, and we'll put a link in the show notes, called The Magic of Thinking Big. And it's by Dr. Schwartz. I can't remember his first name right now, but it's a book I've read many times, and it will just kind of walk you through a process of thinking bigger too.
Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.